Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Hello, and welcome to Dig This Environmental Watch. I am your host, Pamela Spoto. Craig Boyer will join our discussion, and Shane Houchins is our engineer. Hello, Craig.
Hello there, Pamela.
And today we are featuring Sarah Hoxie, who is a musician, poet, and songwriter, as well as a science and environmental teacher at Chrysalis Charter School in Palo Cedro. She describes herself as a naturalist. And later in the show, I'm sure that Sarah is going to talk a little bit more about what a naturalist means to her. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Pamela.
I didn't know this initially, but we are neighbors.
Right.
And in fact, we both live out in the country, out between Palo Cedro and Redding, and I think we're one street apart.
We share the ridge up there on top.
That's right. And Sarah was on Late Night Poetry Jam a few years ago, probably 3 years ago, over 3 years ago, and that was wonderful. So today the focus is a little bit different because this is Environmental Watch, but we're going to be talking about her teaching at Chrysalis Charter School, as well as hear some of her music and how she blends music and art in education. So I would like to tell you a little more about Sarah Hoxie. And as I go through this bio, I'm probably going to stop and ask her a question or two. And as far as I know, Sarah has produced a CD called Waterfall Boy, and another CD is on its way. So where did you get the name Waterfall Boy? That's an interesting name. I was thinking about that.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for inviting me up here today. This is really fun. Waterfall Boy is a song. It's the title song, and it's a song about my son. I wrote it for him when he moved up to the river and became a kayaker and a whitewater raft guide. And, you know, and it dawned on my husband and I that when he was really little, like 5 years old, we couldn't pry him away from waterfalls. And we were in Montana one time, and he was in this waterfall and playing, and when it was time to leave, he just had an utter meltdown, and he said, I'm the waterfall boy. I'm the waterfall boy. I'm not leaving. And so, you know, when he moved up to the Trinities and started becoming like this, you know, thoroughly crazy whitewater guy, we remember that. And then the song just sort of came, the way songs do, kind of out of the ether. You don't know where they're coming from, but that was a huge inspiration for it.
I knew there was a story with that. That's a great story.
Yeah, a good one.
Yes. And so you have another CD that you are right in the middle of making right now. Is that correct? You're in the studio,
right?
The music studio, and doing this.
Yes.
And what is the name of that CD going to be?
That CD is going to be For the Time We're Here. The title cut, and I'm recording it down at After Hours, and it's been a real adventure.
Good. And we'll be looking forward to that. How much longer do you think it will be before you release it? Or do you have an idea? It just depends on how all the tracks come together and the musicians that are helping you with this or are playing on it with you, how that all comes together.
Yeah, it really is, because, you know, I'm using my friends and family to help a lot with it. So my sister's on it, my son's on it, my good friends. And that makes it really special. This week I had two really good friends come in, two different days. One came from Chico, the other came from the coast. And they recorded on that. I'm kind of anticipating that we'll have an EP done sometime this fall. And we're going to talk about it on Monday and see how much work we have to do on about six of them. And then the rest, it might be another year before we get everything completely done for the whole CD.
And I think I'd like to mention now, because it is fascinating, that you come from a family of musicians, and your sister is a professional musician in Nashville, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And she's going to be playing on the CD.
She's on it.
Is she going to sing too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's beautiful. She came out in March, and she came from Nashville, and she recorded just background and just sang with me on a couple of the songs. And she's just got a beautiful voice, and she's an awesome guitar player, and so it's really nice to have her.
And, you know, I'm thinking as we're sitting here talking how this all blends together, because we're talking about music, we're talking about art, and yet you are also a teacher, and you deal with the environment and science and field trips, and you love nature, and you love the rivers. So to me, this all kind of goes hand in hand. And I also would like to say that you have three children and a husband of 28 years. Is that
is That is correct.
28 years. That's a heck of a long time. Congratulations.
Thank you. Sometimes it's a little dizzying. We go, wow, it's amazing we've come this far.
Well, it is, especially in our, and not that I'm going to go off on this, but I think the divorce rate is something like 50 or 60%. And so, wow, great.
Well, you know, getting divorced is a lot of work. So, you know, it's just, you know.
It's easier to stay together.
Yeah, sometimes it is. You just have to kind of work those things through, so.
And that's a really good point, you know, working things through rather than just saying, this is a problem, I'm out of here, you know. But sticking and working things through.
I think both of us came from families where there wasn't any divorce, so we really didn't have a, template for that, so.
good for you. Yeah. And then being a teacher at Chrysalis Charter School, which is focused on science and the environment, as I understand it. But you've been there for 17 years.
17 years, yeah.
Wow, that is a...
It's also dizzying.
That's how long I've known you, Sarah.
Right.
17 years.
17 years, yeah. Craig was one of the first people I met when I moved to Shasta County.
Where did you move from?
Well, when I first came up here, we came from Martinez, but we'd come from the Central Coast, the Loma Mar area before that, and I'd lived up here when I was in my early 20s, too. So, you know, you come around full circle so many times in your life.
And as we move along here with this biography, you play music regularly in many different locales.
It seems to be that way these days.
And especially this summer, I mean, you've been traveling around and playing in not only in Shasta County, but in other places.
I've been mostly playing up in Trinity County, mm-hmm. and that seems to, my heart is up there, and so it seems to be that's where I've been playing music, and I've had some really wonderful gigs, and I've had some really interesting people up there this summer.
Good, good. And when we were talking at the beginning of this week, you were saying that you spend a lot of time on rivers, rafting, and camping, and this is a very big deal to you. Why is that a big deal?
You know, we raised our kids to be river kids. We started taking them out when they were really little. You know, I was raised kind of backpacking, and, you know, that's what we did. But my mother, she'd take us to the Stanislaus River, and we'd swim around in the Stan and climb around on the rocks. And some of my earliest memories are doing that. And then when we started having kids, we decided just to take them whitewater rafting and on expedition trips. So we did some big, with other families who had kids, our kids' ages. And we just would, once a year, we would just go somewhere, like we'd get a permit to do the Green River in Utah or the Salmon River in Idaho. And we would just get our boats, take our kids. And the thing about a boat is you can put everything on there. You can put the dog on there, the dirty laundry, the bocce balls. It all goes on there. And you know, you just tie it all down and you go down the river and you find a beach and you pull out and you camp. You set up. It's a lot of work. I got to tell you, it's a lot of work. But it's paid off in spades because the kids are all river kids and they're all very bonded and they're all very comfortable in their own skins out in the wilderness and in nature. And anywhere on a river, all three of my kids and all the kids that were in our river group are all like that.
That is so wonderful. I was thinking, of course, when I was growing up and how unlike that my life was, you know, and I remember my mother going, now be careful now, don't do that because you're going to hurt yourself, or don't do that because you're going to break that, or whatever the case is. And so I find myself not, you know, I think I was a really curious kid, but you, after a while, I better not do that. And when you said you took your children, or when you were a child and you're playing on the rocks by the water, I mean, my first thought was, oh my goodness, you could slip on the rocks and hit your head. And but those are things that you don't even think about. You just become agile around the water and love the water. And
you do become agile. As a parent, though, it never does go away. Like, I understand that parent thing, too. Because after you've watched your sons jump off of huge to high precipices, you know, it does age you a little bit. It's like, oh no, really from there. But, you know, that's just part of being a mom, I think.
Okay. And the last thing I wanted to say in this part is that when we were talking at the beginning of the week, you told me that you have a very busy and big life.
Well, right now it is. Right. This summer has just it's been relentless. It's just like one day after another. I think things will calm down once school starts. But I get back into working.
I really like that, I have a big life. You know, it's like big life, like you inhabit your life.
Well, I decided to really embrace it this summer because there is so much going on. And I thought, boy, if I don't start writing stuff down, I'm not going to remember what happened next. And when did I do that? Was it before this or after that? So I've been keeping a journal just to make sure that I remember everything because everything's going by so fast and there's been a lot going on.
Will songs come out of that journal, do you think?
Maybe. It's hard to know. You know, I never know when a song's going to come. If I ask for one, I can sit patiently and wait, and it might just come, but you just never know.
And I want to remind our listening audience that this is Dig This Environmental Watch, and we are featuring Sarah Hoxie today, who is a musician, a poet, songwriter, as well as a teacher. And what I think I would like to do is go into some information about Chrysalis Charter School that has this science and environmental focus. And I thought maybe you could tell our listening audience about the school and what you do there exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, Chrysalis is such an interesting school and such an interesting concept for a school. So I've been there for 17 years, but the school is over 20 years old. So I came in and started working. It's a charter school, so I was hired right on the eve of the first charter renewal because charter schools are renewed. Their charters are renewed every 5 years. So it had been in existence already for 5 years when I came on board. But there are several concepts that build the school that make it really interesting. And before I go on, I just want to explain that a charter school, and there are a lot of them in Shasta County, are free public schools. It's an alternative to standard public schools. I will never say they're better than standard public schools. It's just a different approach to education. So the charter schools tend to have a theme, and they have their charter and certain ground rules. It's like a constitution that they operate under. So Chrysalis, our focus is science and nature. You'll notice that a lot of charter schools have different focuses, and ours is science and nature. And one of the ways that we do that is to take kids outside and teach them outside at least one half a day a week all year. We also do a lot of camping trips, field trips. Our older kids do some backpacking. They do a lot of hikes. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time just trying to make those connections in the natural world when we go out and have the kids really try to see how everything comes together. We want kids to be problem solvers. We want them to be systems thinkers. We want them to be able to see the big picture and not try to think of the world in fragments and parts, although it's important to understand those working parts, but how all those working parts go together.
Well, what age groups do you have?
This is kindergarten through eighth grade. So I was in the kindergarten classroom for 14 years. And that was a really interesting place to be. And they get it, by the way. 5 and 6-year-olds, they put it together just as well as anybody else. So it's really fun. But you just have to start at that age to really expose them to things and teach them how to walk quietly, how to listen. And those are things we start with, and everybody does that from kindergarten to the eighth grade. Learn how to sit quietly, walk quietly, and listen.
That is so amazingly interesting because I was, as we are neighbors, a street apart, you know, in the morning sometimes I'll go out early with my cup of coffee and sit on the deck and watch my dog play, but I'm listening to the birds, you know, I'm listening to the sounds of nature, and it's just lovely, and the different levels, the different sounds that come together, and every once in a while I'll hear a car in the distance. But overall, I mean, it's just listening. And we were talking just a little bit earlier, and one of my complaints is that people get stuck in virtual reality and cell phones and games and whatever, and they're not outside, you know, doing the kinds of things, you know, walking softly, listening, connecting with nature, doing those things that are wonderful things to do. As children and adults as well.
It is true. I mean, if you've got a cell phone, you know, that screen is very seductive.
It is.
And apps are really fun. You can download a lot of stuff. It takes some self-discipline to turn all that off and, you know, really, immerse yourself in the natural world.
And I think that you mentioned, too, that one thing that you do specifically is some of these field trips with the students. I don't know whether all the teachers there do that, but that is one thing that you specifically do.
Yeah, all the teachers do it. And the reason that all the teachers do it is because, you know, it would be easy to have one or two of us. Paul Kreffel is the founder of the school, and it's his vision. He's a wonderful naturalist, a very well-known naturalist and writer. It would be really easy to have Paul and maybe me, because I have this huge passion for this, to be the outdoor teachers, but we want all the teachers to do it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I my job is more to mentor the teachers and teach them how to do it, because otherwise we're just a school that has a couple of science specialists that teach outside, and we don't want to be that. We want everybody on board and everybody out there with their kids exploring and everyone kind of imparting that passion to the students.
And that brings me to my next question, and that's just straight up. Why are science and environmental issues important?
Oh, there's
for so many reasons.
So many. Well, you know, we need to be critical thinkers. There's a difference between science and belief. And, that's where we're stuck right now. We're really, you know, we have a society that is kind of divided between those who believe and those who accept evidence. And you don't have to be one or the other. You know, it's okay to believe in some things and accept the evidence in other things. But if you only believe things, a lot of things can pass you by. Let's put it that way, and can pass us all by. So if you go to the doctor and the doctor says to you, you know, you have cancer, and we need to right now, like day after tomorrow, you need surgery, and then we're gonna put you on a regimen of chemotherapy and radiation, and you know, with any luck, you know, we're gonna get you through this. And if you go to a doctor and a doctor tells you that, you're gonna say, okay, I'm on board. I mean, I feel perfectly fine, but oh yeah, I see that X-ray right there, and I see what that says, and I see these tests, and I believe my doctor because my doctor went to medical school, my doctor's a scientist, my doctor understands the human body and understands how it works, and I trust my doctor, and go for it, let's get this taken care of. And most people would react that way, most people do. But you know, if a climate scientist says, this planet's really sick, and if we don't do this right now, if we don't do X, Y, and Z, it's going to be painful, it's going to be hard, but we have to in order to sustain the systems on this planet that keep us all going. If we don't do that, you know, if we don't believe or understand or accept what the scientist is saying, if we don't give that scientist and those climate scientists and those people the same reverence and esteem that we would give a regular physician and say, yeah, that person's been to college, that person's got a PhD, that person understands the statistical analysis of what's going on here. We don't have to all understand all of that, but that's what's called accepting the evidence. And if the evidence is right there, and it is right there, if we don't have that foundation behind us to say, yeah, we accept the evidence that supports what's happening here, we're in big trouble. So we need to teach kids, we need to teach parents, we need to teach everybody how to look at evidence and accept evidence and understand evidence and what it takes to be a scientist, what it takes to be a person that studies this, in order for them to get their head around it so they can explain it to us. They're not lying.
Right. It's not a Chinese plot.
No, it is not.
And I want to remind our listeners that you are indeed listening to KKRN Community Radio, listener-supported, 88.5 on your listening dial, or you can go to the homepage and click on the listen button. And we are in the studio with Sarah Hoxie and Craig Boyer. I am host Pamela Spoto, and this is Dig This Environmental Watch. And I really want you to play some music, but before you do that, since we're talking about evidence, it does seem today, it more than seems, a lot of people aren't looking at the evidence, and there's an extreme amount of evidence. And what I'm saying, a lot of people, I mean, there are those that are denying climate science, especially in the White House and cabinet members and so forth, and appointees. And we've recently pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord and so forth. And yet the evidence is so overwhelming. I mean, not only is there written data, scientific studies, but the filming of areas, you know, in the North Pole, South Pole, for example, that shows 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, it's so obvious that this is happening, and the species are dying, like 100 species a day, and that is minimal that are dying. And yet, I think as we were talking earlier, it really is kind of an inconvenient truth that, my goodness, this is happening. I don't even want to look at it. I don't exactly know why we would want to deny. I mean, international climatologists, we're not talking about just here and there a few, but that all agree, except, as I understand it, a few that are paid to do studies by fossil fuel industries. And the fossil fuel industry has come out, too, with the research that they have known for some time about global warming and climate change. So it just seems to be a big problem for us today.
It's a huge problem. And, you know, Rex Tillerson, he knows.
Yes.
He knows, you know. And, you know, I honestly think when I heard our LaMalfa representative,
yes,
Mr. LaMalfa, talk about climate change, and, you know, he's another one that just denies climate change. And I, you know, it amazes me. And I, you know, I feel like to some degree it started with an assault on science education way back during the Scopes trial. And there's been an assault on it, on science education in this country. I'm not talking about globally. I'm just talking about here.
Yes.
Because other countries totally get it. Everybody else does, you know. But, you know, first of all, the assault on science education that's been going on that seems to interfere with a belief system. So science is not a belief system, but religion is a belief system, and that's fine. They can certainly
they're
coexist.
Compatible. They're,
absolutely.
They can be compatible.
Yeah, I mean, the Pope recognizes it.
Yes, he does. In fact, he says pollution is a sin.
That's right.
I think that's great. Good for you, Pope Francis.
Yes, yeah, he's cool. But, you know, there has been an assault on science education in this country, and I think it's paid off. I think it's the chickens have come home to roost. But I also think that it's also, you know, then you got a voting block of people that are more centered on a belief system than evidence-based science. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. I'm just saying let's go back to that analogy about having cancer. And, you know, then you've got, a voting block that you can pull in. So all you have to do is, you know, if you want that voting block, you just go for the people that have a certain belief system instead of, it's interesting.
Well, it is interesting as systems collapse globally, I mean, in terms of species, in terms of water, in terms of air, in terms of, I mean, I think the last six years are the hottest recorded on record, you know,
yeah.
And the temperatures just keep going up. The ice continues to melt, and then we enter these feedback loops that just accelerate things. So, but anyway, there's a lot of information here, and it's really interesting information. And what I'd like to kind of go back to a moment here is that we started off talking about your interest in music and that you are a songwriter. And so you I think you had told me, and I totally agree with this, that music is one way that children can become interested, connected, and they can remember things, you know, through song. And you and I asked you if you played music or sang or did music in the classroom, and you said you did. And so I was hoping that you could play a song or two for us that, that you might do in the classroom. And I think one of the ones, now, I have two here written down, Drill Ye Terriers, and that's a cover.
Yeah, it's a cover.
And then one that you wrote called I Love the Earth.
Yes.
And so which one would you like to do first?
Well, I guess we should do, we can do I Love the Earth since we're on an environmental theme. And
we'll
do Drill Ye Terriers, and I'll explain why that one is important.
Okay. Okay, so why don't we do that? And you have your guitar right here. And so Sarah Hoxie is going to pick up her guitar. And I think, and what is interesting about this too, is that you have the children join in on this song, right?
Yeah, this song came out of the ether one day when my kindergarten class was going bonkers and I had to do something to calm them down. And you know, I said, songs come whenever they do. I don't have a whole lot of control. So this one just came out immediately right then. And we've been singing it ever since. And it's actually getting legs, and kind of a lot of people are singing it now because it's really easy. But so if you're a teacher out there and you want a good song for your class, you can pick any category and sing this. And it's great for getting kids to get some perspective. And people and adults, you think, yeah, that's right. The earth is probably the only place that has that. You know, we forget that we always think we're separate from this planet. We're raised, you know, so many of our paradigms kind of lead to that, but we're not. We are this planet. And so we don't have a lot of places to go. And so
we get to be the children?
Yeah. Okay. You get to be the children, Craig.
All right. Well, you too.
Okay, so I'm gonna start off with roses. Let's do trees and plants or animals. Let's do animals. You wanna do animals?
I like animals.
Okay, and you wanna do trees?
Okay.
And I'll do flowers.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I love the earth because the earth has roses. The only roses in the solar system. The only roses in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. Pamela, why do you love the earth?
I love the wolves.
The wolves.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I love the earth because the earth has wolves. The only wolves in the solar system. The only wolves in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. So, Craig, why do you love the earth?
I love it because it has ponderosa pines on roses.
Well, I love the earth because it has ponderosas. The only ponderosas in the solar system. The only ponderosas in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. Okay, well, I love the earth because it has shooting stars.
Whoa.
I love the earth because the earth has shooting stars. The only shooting stars in the solar system. The only shooting stars in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. Pamela?
Grizzlies. I love grizzlies.
She's into the big mammals. I love the earth because the earth has grizzlies. The only grizzlies in the solar system. The only grizzlies in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. Craig?
Oh.
Back to trees?
Yeah. I love the earth because it has figs, fig trees.
Oh, I love fig trees.
I have a fig tree.
Say, I'm coming to your house. Oh, I love the earth because the earth has fig trees. Only fig trees in the solar system. The only fig trees in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. I'm going to do one more, and it's tiger lilies because I love tiger lilies. I love the earth because the earth has tiger lilies. The only tiger lilies in the solar system. The only tiger lilies in the solar system. That's why I love the earth.
Can we do honeybees, though?
Yes.
Just honeybees?
Yeah. I love the earth because the earth has honeybees. The only honeybees in the solar system. The only honeybees in the solar system. That's why I love the earth. I'll tell you, this goes this song goes on.
I could see that, and because I was thinking about figs, and I was thinking about the garden, and we need the bees, and bees are dying, and so I really wanted to.
I'm glad you threw that in there.
Yes.
Talk about the bees.
Well, I'll tell you. The honeybee festival in Palo Cedro.
That's right.
And Chrysalis School.
Yeah.
School.
It's right there on campus. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That the thing about that song is, yeah, kids never want to stop. Like, that song will go on for 15 minutes, and everybody's like, and then they start in, and the kindergartners will start in on their friends. Oh, Chelsea, I love the earth because the earth has Chelsea, and oh, I love the earth because the earth has Pamela, and then you know we're singing about their friends.
How wonderful is that?
But you know, yeah, that's the thing that's cool about it. So.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, would you like to do Drill Ye Terriers, and then we're going to take a short break?
I will do Drill Ye Terriers, and I'll tell you why I do this song. So,
it's not Drill Baby Drill?
No, it's not.
Good.
I was waiting for that, Craig.
I hadn't thought about that, but yes, yes, thank God I hadn't thought about that.
So the other thing, you know, we are facing some real environmental issues, and they're politically driven. We're also facing, I heard a story yesterday on NPR about how a lot of the restaurants in Martha's Vineyard right now are only operating half-time. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Because the people that come from Jamaica in the summer to work there can't get visas. And so, you know, it's
they've been working there for 8 years.
Right.
You know, coming year after year.
Yeah, and this one restaurant owner said, yeah, so I'm sitting here working, you know, I've shut my restaurant down 50%. Meanwhile, all my workers are back in Jamaica and they don't have jobs. And I'm thinking, wow, that's intense.
You know, it's so interesting, too, because I'd heard that Trump had just applied for workers as well for his resort place in Florida, because he needed cooks and cleaners and waitresses and waiters. And yet he said, well, okay, all right.
I know
a little
where
hypocrisy
we're going here.
There, maybe.
Saying that it's going to be made in America by Americans and then banning other quote outsiders unquote, but yet he uses them too. Our economy has been based on diversity and all these different people coming and working and being and doing and
well,
yes.
And that's the thing about the universe. The universe, the whole universe, is coded for diversity.
Yes,
everything is different. There no two things are the same anywhere. You start looking around, and you know, out there, that oak tree and that manzanita, they're not the same. You know, the universe, that Mars and Jupiter.
But when you've seen one tree, you've seen them all. One redwood,
you,
and you've seen
Craig.
Them all.
And that's the problem with monocultures, is that trying to plant one thing, big ag, and then we have this huge problem.
Right.
So, all right.
Okay, so the reason that this song is significant is just that it's really about immigrants. So this is a song about Irish immigrants. The kids love it. I've been singing it 4 years. It is a song that's been in children's songbooks. I learned it in fourth grade. I learned some slightly different lyrics that are now not PC. But back in 1960, whatever, there didn't seem to be a problem with that. But anyhow, I love this song, and the kids love it too, because it's about the Irish immigrants that came to America. They worked the railroads, as did the Chinese, as did many, many different cultures from all over the world. And they worked in very harsh and dangerous conditions. And so that's what this song's called. That's what the song's about. It's called Drill Ye Terriers. Well, every morning at 7 o'clock, 20 terriers are working at the rock, and the boss comes along and he says, keep still, come down heavy on the cast iron drill. Drill ye terriers, drill. And drill ye terriers, drill, for it's work all day for the sugar in your day down beyond the railway. And drill ye terriers, drill and blast, and fire and blast and fire, fire in the hole. Well, our boss is a fine man down to the ground, married a woman 6 feet round. She bakes bread, she bakes it good, she bakes it hard as chunks of wood. And drill ye terriers, drill. And drill ye terriers, drill, for it's a work all day for the sugar in your day down beyond the railway. And drill ye terriers, drill and blast and fire, fire in the hole. Well, our new foreman is Dan McCann. I'll tell you sure, he's a blind mean man. Last week a premature blast went off. Mile in the air went Big Jim Goff. Drill ye terriers, drill. And drill ye terriers, drill. For it's work all day for the sugar in your tay down beyond the railway. And drill ye terriers, drill. And blast and fire. Fire in the hole. So the next time payday comes along, Jim Goff was short a buck he found. What for asked he, came this reply. You docked for the time you were up in the sky. And drill ye terriers drill. And drill ye terriers drill. For it's work all day for the sugar in your tay down beyond the railway. And drill ye terriers drill. And blast and fire. And blast and fire. Fire in the hole.
Thank you so much. And for our listeners, that is Sarah Hoxie singing and playing guitar. And we're talking about environmental issues and science issues. And we're going to be taking a short break. And this is KKRN 88.5 Community Radio. I'm host Pamela Spoto, Environmental Watch. Dig this, Environmental Watch, with Craig Boyer and Sarah, of course, Hoxie. So we're going to listen to a CD, a song by Bob Wickline.
I had a dream the other night. Now in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see, if ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. As we take, 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 like a good mother, Mother Nature keeps giving, but her heart must be ready to break. She's being abused and overused by her children who choose to ignore. There's only so much that she can give before she can give no more. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not greed lead the way. We pour in the air, we poison the land, and we poison the water we drink. And we're the only known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, happiness lies in how much we buy and sell. And more of paradise is lost, and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature in the coming years, when we will have about 10 billion neighbors on the sphere. Will our children's children wake up to the American dream? Or will it have become a nightmare beyond imagining? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not greed lead the way. So much and waste so much, how much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? A little pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let me not breathe.
much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much and how much longer?
And Bob Wickline stops that song very quickly, does he not? And I really like that. Let's take our heads out of the sand. Let's have need, not greed, lead the way. How appropriate.
Because if we don't, we might come to a sudden stop.
A very sudden stop, collapse. And I want to remind the listeners, in case you're just tuning in, this is Dig This Environmental Watch. I'm host Pamela Spoto in the studio with Craig Boyer and our featured guest today, Sarah Hoxie, who is a teacher at Chrysalis Charter School, which focuses on environment, well, nature and science, including obviously the environment. And she's also a wonderful musician. So we've been talking about music, the classroom, nature, science, and so forth. So we're going to continue our conversation here because I really like it. And I think it is so important, especially what we teach our children and how we teach our children to be in nature, to see the web of life, to see the connections, that we're all in relationship. You know, you take out, in my opinion, take out one thread. You go, well, we have to kill the wolves. Oh, we're going to kill all the wolves. And you take out that one thread and not realize the impact that all these species have in relationship to nature. And we need them. We need the wildness. I truly believe that. So Sarah, I wanted to ask you, and I know at your school, the Chrysalis Charter School, and it is, so you work with homeschooling, and I'm thinking on a national level as well, why some parents are afraid and don't want their children learning about science. You know, does this conflict with religious beliefs, in your opinion? Now, your school is different, though. So can you speak to that issue?
Well, you know, I mean, I can try. I don't see it at Chrysalis because when you come to Chrysalis, you have a choice to go to that school or not. There's no district that you are mandated to enroll your child in at Chrysalis. You come to us and you say, please, can I get in? And if there's room, we'll take you. And so you would only do that if, you know, if you had a reason. And the parents, you know, want a really good, solid education for their kids, and we're a very good school. And, you know, they know coming in we're a science and nature school. And so, you know, we're going to be, that's what we're going to teach. And so I don't, you know, even in the homeschool program, you know, there are a lot of people with really strong religious beliefs, but people are very balanced and want their kids, you know, the parents that I know, because I am a homeschool teacher, want their kids to get all of that. And of course, we don't teach the religious aspect, but they definitely get a really strong science education when they're at Chrysalis. Nationally, you know, there's definitely a block of people that their paradigm is that, you know, in order to go to heaven and, you know, have their soul saved, you know, that they need to follow a path. And, you know, in their estimation and probably in the way that they see it, and I don't hold that same system of seeing things. So I can't really speak to the way they think, but I think it probably gets in the way of, you know, what, you know, the way that they process and try to understand their cosmology mm-hmm. through the Bible. So, you know, it gets in the way, but it doesn't get in the way of all Christians or all religious people, just some.
And that is very true, because I was thinking of certain denominations that are very, very active in wanting to care for nature and for other people and believe in peace efforts. And most, every spiritual leader I can think of, you know, is walking a path of peace. And that means not an assault on nature in my mind.
Right. And know. Stewardship from a very visceral earth perspective. And there are a lot of churches that are like that. They just don't get the press, but they're definitely in there working hard. I know the United Council of Churches is very strong in that.
And my partner is a wonderful organic gardener and farmer, and he believes that, and this is true, I can see it, what we take from the earth, we give back to the earth. And there are many ways of doing that, for example, in regenerative gardening or farming, and that is, to me, a very wonderful approach to the earth. And we were talking a little bit about critical thinking, and I as well teach critical thinking, and that really is the ability in my mind to be able to analyze, to be able to say this is a good argument, this is a weak argument, that reasoning follows, that reasoning doesn't follow, and you know, sometimes a person will say, well, that's just really stupid, that's whatever, and you know, I have to remind the person that that's not an argument,
right?
You know what? To name call, that is not an argument.
No,
that is not evidence. That's just name calling.
It's not evidence. You've got to, you know, and I think that's the important thing is to show the evidence, and to be able to find the evidence and to be able to make your argument based on evidence. So, you know, and that's a big part of critical thinking, and just it's higher order thinking. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, a lot of the Common Core standards are really based on that. They really call for kids to look at several different sources and to draw a conclusion based on several different sources and to synthesize that information and to be able to come up with a new answer. And that's really what we're really trying to do with students right now, is to get them to think in those terms based on what they read here and what they read there and how that evidence is supported, and then come up with something new and a solution. And I also believe really strongly that, you know, all of the problems that we're facing right now do have solutions, because all the problems we're facing right now we've put out there, contrary to what some people's interpretation of the data might be. It's overwhelming support for, you know, human cause to this climate change that we're facing, and that evidence is there. So if it's caused by humans, then we've got all of the answers. We put into play all of the imagination and problem solving it took to get to this place we're in. And so we do have the capacity to turn it around. And I think we can, and I think we have to, and we have to teach hope, because if we don't teach hope, then all bets are off. You know, we live out of our hope, and that is a belief system.
Yes, and it reminds me of Bob Wickline's song that we just listened to too. It's moving away from greed, and it just seems, in my opinion, greed. And the continual wanting of more, 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 infinite growth. But we only have a finite planet. And that is another inconvenient truth.
Yeah.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you, you know, you travel a lot through nature, and, you know, you see her beauty, and you make music. And I kind of wanted to bring this back a little bit to music and education, or art and education. And if you have goals with music and education, or it's as you showed us earlier with songs that you might sing in the class and students are joining in, is there anything else that you want to say about the role or benefits of music in the classroom?
Well, I think music and the arts in general, I mean, we're not an art school, but you know, those schools are out there too. You know, you want to trigger those synapses that really fire well under pressure. You just, you know, give those kids a creative outlet, and you know, teach them how to sing, how to play an instrument, how to paint, how to interpret art, how to write poetry. You know, you're going to touch on things that are really going to help them be better overall problem solvers and, you know, information processors and better writers and better at everything. It's amazing to me when a school, say, goes into, I don't know that how much of this is still going on now, that No Child Left Behind is sort of on the back burner, but, you know, schools in PI, which is, you know, when you haven't met all the scores in the old STAR test, and then the state would come in and really, I mean, you know, no art, no music, no nothing. You're just going to learn to read. Well, you want the kids to learn to read, you got to give them art and music. It all goes together.
Yes. That's true.
So does, and also play. You got to be out there playing. You got to get dirty. You know, I mean, I used to tell parents, if your kid comes home dirty, they've had a good day. You know?
And there's science behind
there's
that,
science
too.
There's science behind there.
In terms of the building the immune system. And I was seeing something the other day about children, like a child covered in mud, and saying, you know, this, she's working on building her immune
that's
system,
right.
You know? And I'm, great.
That's right.
So that's very good. And I want to ask you, you know, several more questions, and then because we're coming close to the end of the show, we have about 10 minutes left. So I want to ask you these two questions and then say a few things, and I think we're going to have you play another song. But the question is, what keeps you sane in these troubling times? And you mentioned hope just a little bit ago, and I'm thinking, when I mean troubling times, what I mean, just so everybody's clear on what I mean, we have endless war, we have climate denial, we have dismantling of regulations to keep our air and water and soil clean, we have corporate media, these are troubling times. And some of the friends that I have, I mean, this can lead to depression. It's kind of like, oh my goodness, all this is going on. So what do you do to keep sane in these troubling times?
Oh, well, I go to the river like I did yesterday. you know, I do live out of my hope, and I do have a little, I think some of us that are a little bit older, I don't think anybody in this room is that old. But we all remember that time when when Reagan got elected, and watching, you know, a lot of things get dismantled there. And I was in college at the time, and I was ready to quit college. I was taking ethics classes, environmental studies classes, and I'm studying environmental law, and all these laws that I was studying were being deregulated as I was studying them. It was a very similar time to now. I think now is worse. But I think having the practice of having gone through it when Reagan was elected has, you know, given me kind of pause to go, okay, this is going to, you know, the pendulum does swing, and people are aware. As difficult as it is to watch the present administration go through and, you know, gut the EPA and not fund the State Department and go through and overturn national monuments. And, you know, as hard as it is to watch that, I also know the midterms are only, you know, they're next year. And, you know, the chickens may very well come home to roost at that point in time, and it'll put the kibosh on a lot of this. And, you know, and just the gridlock with all of the scandal and the problems that they're having, they're not able to do a whole lot. They could be doing a lot more if they were stealth about it. But, you know, they're being blocked a lot. So, you know, I think that the wherewithal and the tenacity that, you know, that Americans, most Americans have, because it's not most Americans that are doing this. Let's remember, it's just a small group that have a lot of power right now, but most people are pretty grounded and they know what's up and they're on it and they're watching it. And you just look at that, march that happened the day after the inauguration. Look at that march. That was amazing. That
huge,
was incredible.
Huge.
It was huge.
Despite what others might
people
say.
People were marching on boats and, you know, down in Antarctica. And I was in Sacramento, and I didn't know there were that many people in California. And they were all on the mall that day. And it was just fabulous. So it tells you that, yes, there are people out there. They have a voice. They have a conscience. And, you know, everybody needs to just keep this forefront in their minds that this isn't normal, and it's not going to stay this way. And if your heart knows that it's wrong, you need to stand up.
Yes.
You need to make calls. You need to show up at protests, and you need to vote. And if you do those things, you know, then there's hope. And so I just wait for the midterms. That's
okay. And Craig, were you going to say something or?
No, I'm just concurring with what you guys are saying.
Uh-huh,
it makes a lot of sense to me.
And I had a final question here, but I'm thinking that this question you also touched on in your answer to what keeps you sane in these troubling times is what are several things, in your opinion, we can do for the planet, the world, Mother Earth, and all of her species? And one thing I heard you say is that we as citizens, rather than consumers, we as citizens need to be active and to be actively involved in these changes that we want to see happen. And you also mentioned the river, because I think for you, from my talking with you, the river seems to give you a lot of solace, being on the river, being in nature. So would you like to add anything of what some things that we might do to help the planet that you haven't already said? And if not, that's fine too, because you've covered a lot of territory here.
Well, I think that your average citizen, all of us who are just living the American lifestyle, where you've got a car and a house and you've got a Macy's credit card and you've got, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. You're not a bad person. But think really strongly about using the things you have, not buying and consuming a lot of new stuff. And the reason I say that is because your carbon footprint is all over that Macy's credit card, all over that Amazon credit card. Anytime you buy something new, your carbon footprint is huge. So if you just, remember the thrift store is a good place. Remember that a used car is, even if it's not a Prius, just a used car is not going to have the carbon footprint that a new car is going to have. A used building is not going to have the carbon footprint that a new building is going to have. No matter how energy efficient and green that new building is, just the carbon footprint that got it there is going to take forever to get rid of. So think in terms of using carefully the resources you've got, and be mindful. Think about it. Make sure your compost pile is working, that your recycling bin is always way fuller than your trash can.
Yes.
Because everything, the statistic I heard about, we've generated enough plastic to fill Argentina. That's a lot of plastic, and that stuff doesn't go away.
It's killing the ocean.
So keep a mug in your car.
Yeah.
Go down to the thrift store and spend $3 and fill up your cupboard with used mugs. And then every time your friends come over for coffee or you go anywhere, keep a couple in your car, say, take this with you. But I will return your mug. No, it cost me a quarter at the thrift store. Just keep it and use it. And then we're not using styrofoam.
Yes. And we only have about 4 minutes left. And I've really enjoyed having Sarah.
This has been fun. Thank
Sarah
you.
Hoxie on our show and Craig Boyer as well. I'd like to say a few thank yous. And while we're doing this, I think Sarah's going to get her guitar and maybe play us a little bit of music as we go out. So I want to thank Sarah Hoxie again. I want to thank Craig Boyer, Shane Houchins, and our listening audience. And I want to remind the listeners that we have a new production studio open downtown on Friday, which is, maybe we're going to already have our opening by the time the show airs. So, Sarah, what are you going to sing for us?
Well, this is a song. This is one of my more recent songs. I wrote it this winter, and it's going to be on the new CD.
Oh, good.
And it's called I'll Tell You the Story Again. And it was really, I wrote it for my three now adult children. There's a place on the river where I like to go, tell you the story again. The pools are deep and the river is low, tell you the story again. The mountains are tall and the valleys are deep. Winter is upon us, the world is asleep. There are no more secrets I am willing to keep, tell you the story again. There's a light in the sky and it's been there a while, tell you the story again. Shine straight on down, you can see for a mile, tell you the story again. Might be a miracle, it might be a sign, might be a spirit or an angel divine. Might be the hourglass running through time, tell you the story again. Early in the morning when you are alone, tell you the story again. Your heart takes to rhythm like a metronome, tell you the story again. Clipping away at the life that you live, sweet kind of measure for all that you give, just like the sand on the beach is a sieve, tell you the story again. So here is my heart and I give it to you, tell you the story again. Here are the mountains and the rivers do tell you the story again. Here is a gift, it is your time to spend. Dance in the moonlight, dance in the wind. Let the world know that it's yours till the end. Tell you the story again. Tell you the story again. Tell you the story again.
Thank you, Sarah Hoxie, and this is Dig This, Environmental Watch, and goodbye for now.